Can we start?
Okay.
Sure. So, can we start?
Of course, yeah. Don't use it for in the court. It's okay.
No. I won't publish it anywhere. So don't worry. So, what is your current role in the company, and since when?
I'm in the company since 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Started as a developer.
Mm-hmm.
Then started doing usability requirements engineering, and now at the moment I'm an agile consultant.
Okay.
And coach.
Okay, but you're basically your job involves talking to customers, right?
Of course, yes, since the beginning, because when I was developer, I was a front-end guy always.
Okay.
That's why I started doing usability and requirements engineering,
mm-hmm.
because when you're on the front end, you're near the customer, so you always have to talk to him if you want to do a good job.
Correct. How many years of experience you have in the field of software or mobile development?
Whoa, okay, I'm always good with numbers. now it's 2018, my first job, really, job was 2002, so it's 16 years having a paid job.
Mm-hmm.
Then during my studies, I had also jobs.
Right, so let's say about 18 years, 18, 20 years, right?
20 years, yeah.
Great. And how many years of experience you have, okay, roughly you can say, with the gathering requirements?
Well, it's about 15, I would say.
15?
Yeah.
Great. And what is your academic background? Are you a computer engineer or are you business, or you have both?
My background is software engineering. So I did the master in the ATH.
Okay.
In computer science. And that's my original background.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, when you want to do good software, you always have to catch up with business background.
Correct.
But it's not an academic background on business or whatever. It's
experience.
It's experience, it's theoretical background, it's mm-hmm. seminars and so on, but no high usability education on business things.
Right.
Reading books, of course.
Correct. So whatever techniques you use in your company for gathering requirements or talking to clients, how did you learn those and where did you learn those?
Yeah. I started with usability, and usability has a lot of elicitation techniques mm-hmm. used in requirements engineering.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I'm giving also trainings from the IREP, the International Requirements Engineering Board.
Okay.
They have a foundation level, and they have an advanced level called elicitation and consolidation.
Mm-hmm.
So I was giving also the elicitation consolidation training.
Uh-huh.
What I use a lot, because I always had to do with customers.
Correct.
Let me tell you, there are some companies they're doing requirements engineering, but the product has mm-hmm. no customers because the product is a product for other tools.
Mm-hmm.
So they use other techniques.
Okay.
But in my case, I have always a user at the end.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I like to use techniques nearby the user. So, for instance, writing scenarios, making prototypes, mm-hmm. Making walkthroughs of the prototype,
mm-hmm.
Making hallway tests. Mostly I use tools nearby the user.
Okay, but did you learn these techniques during your university days? Or
no, not at all, no.
Okay, so this is through experience and self-taught, right?
This is experience, reading books,
Yeah, great.
Helping doing helping work on the syllabus for elicitation, consolidation.
Mm-hmm. Great.
So you had a lot to read, and it's mostly, I think, it's field experience.
Right. Do you read any latest academic publications or online blogs, articles, etc. regarding your job?
Not anymore in requirements engineering because I read now more about agile,
right.
about business agility.
Right.
So it's now a Swift the last years.
Okay, great. A bit about your company now. So how many employees do you have?
Oh, Zülke, I'm good with numbers. I have no idea.
Okay.
Ask Peter, he knows it.
Okay, great. I'll ask then.
I'm sorry. I'm really bad with numbers.
No, that's okay. When it comes to just like app development, so which geographical markets do you target?
So Zülke has offices in Switzerland, Germany, and Austria, and in London.
Okay. And what are their purposes? Are they development centers or sales centers?
The idea of Zülke is to develop the products there where the market is. So, we have some nearshoring nearshoring locations like in Serbia, and mm-hmm. now since a year in Bulgaria.
Mm-hmm.
These are centers that work for the other centers,
mm-hmm.
but we have a market in Germany. You make a mobile app or an app or whatever for Germany,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes you need people from Switzerland because you don't have enough people or vice versa. The nearshoring centers in Serbia work for Germany, Switzerland, and London.
Okay.
So they don't have, I think it's the only location we have that don't work for other, that work for other markets, not for their own market.
Mm-hmm. So you work essentially in Europe, right?
Yeah. Well, for two years we have in Asia two locations, Hong Kong and Singapore.
Ah, okay.
They also work for local markets. They don't are offshoring centers.
Mm-hmm.
They are normal Zülke companies working for the local market.
Okay. And how many mobile applications have you built so far, roughly?
I can only tell you about Switzerland. In the beginning phase, where each company has their own mobile app, we of course had of these nonsense apps
mm-hmm.
where a website would have been better.
Yeah.
So it was the beginning days. And then we had a lot of apps looking from the view of channel. So the mobile is one channel more to the same data.
Mm-hmm.
And for that we have done work for insurances, for banks, for mm-hmm. health centers.
So roughly 10 apps or more than that?
Sorry?
Roughly 10 apps?
Yeah, more than 10. And not me 10. Personally, but Zülke.
Okay. And are they free? Are they paid? Are they publicly available enterprise applications?
Always. There are enterprise applications mostly.
Mm-hmm.
And we have also apps that are freely available from the beginning where each company wants to have an app.
Okay. And can you say, like, on an average, roughly how many users they would have?
No idea.
Okay. So, I mean, do you just build mobile applications or software in general?
Software in general. So, I would say for Zülke, mobile application is a channel.
Okay.
So, it's a different way to connect the same data.
Mm-hmm.
So, we do not develop games or things only for the mobile. It's a channel plus.
Mm-hmm.
It's something to the web channel and, yeah, something okay. more.
So, you're not a mobile intensive company?
No, I wouldn't say that, yeah.
Okay.
We have people skilled in mobile. We have people Android experts. We have mm-hmm. iOS experts.
Mm-hmm.
But we are not a mobile company.
Okay. Which platforms or app stores do you support? Or is it both? I mean, Android, Google Play, and Apple App Store?
It's both. I don't remember if we still do Windows things. We also had Windows Mobile mm-hmm. people, but I have no idea what they're doing now because
it's
they're not so close to me.
It's history.
So we had all native platforms during the life cycles, even before the Kochel thing from
mm-hmm.
Windows.
Mm-hmm.
Before Windows Mobile came, they also had some mobile thing
mm-hmm.
Out. I think it was Windows Phone 3 or whatever how it was called. I don't remember. In the early days, we also did mobile application.
Mm-hmm.
We also did Java 2ME.
Okay.
So, but always as an idea, as a channel, not as a we want to do now mobile apps.
Right.
We have two mobile apps because it makes sense for the customer.
Mm-hmm. So are you a product based company or service oriented?
We don't have our own products.
Okay, so service based.
We help other companies develop their products.
Okay, great.
Or services.
Mm-hmm. And in that case, if you are providing service to other customers,
mm-hmm.
I mean, can you tell me like on average how long the projects are, on an average? Couple of months. I mean to say the moment you start collecting requirements until you have your first release, on an average that how many months that would take?
I had projects from 4 months to 6 years.
Okay.
Me personally, and mm-hmm. I think our normal projects. Have a longer lifetime, but mm-hmm. we exchange the people after some years.
Okay.
So the longest time I was in a project was because I wanted was a greenfield project, and I wanted to experience how it is when you have to stay longer with the project.
Right.
So I really wanted one release, two releases, three releases. I just want to learn from my own errors.
Mm-hmm.
Because as a consultant, you always see the errors of the others.
Right.
You came in, you are the hero, you change something and say, who was the stupid guy that did that for 2 years ago? And in this case, you are the stupid guy.
Mm-hmm.
So you can learn a lot about the internal of requirements engineering, but also of software engineering.
Right. Because you're building, let's say, mobile apps for your customers, who decides the platforms? Is it you or is it the customer?
It's a customer.
It's the customer, yeah?
It's a customer. They get, of course, from our side input. For
input,
instance,
yeah?
Does it make sense? So if a company has a support both or three
mm-hmm.
Platforms,
mm-hmm.
then we can discuss or arguing why some parts maybe should be not native, should be in HTML.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, putting your password back is something that many of our companies that I know
mm-hmm.
Have built it as a website. So you go out from the app and reset your password on the website
mm-hmm.
because it's not a use case to do it every day.
Mm-hmm.
So you try use cases you have often to make it native and other
mm-hmm.
use cases to make it another app because it's always a question about comfort and money.
Yeah.
If you do everything in three platforms, you pay a lot.
Yeah, so the decision mostly depends on the money, right? It's a budget issue.
It's a budget issue, but also in my eyes, a question of value.
Okay.
How much value has a native implementation of password reset in three platforms?
Value in sense of what?
Value. So how much value do I get for it? Or how much value does the customer get for it?
Do you mean to say the market share? I mean, if I build it for iOS, then I might have more users.
No. No, the idea is if I look to the use cases in an application,
mm-hmm.
some use cases are not so often.
Mm-hmm.
And then the question is, for these use cases, maybe it doesn't make sense to make it three times native for platforms.
Okay.
Then it makes sense to have these use cases in the web.
Okay.
And say, okay, if you need this case, you go out of your iPhone app, you go out of your Android app,
mm-hmm.
to the same web page, then you have a responsive web page,
okay.
and then you can enter your data there.
Mm-hmm.
It's always, of course, it's a money issue, but I think with this money, you can do something better.
Correct.
Another feature. And that's where our competences of requirements consolidation or the elicitation
mm-hmm.
comes in.
Right.
To say, hey, dear business people, doesn't it make sense to make it one time in the web
mm-hmm.
as a responsive? Then you can save the money for another feature that is more important or that is also cool.
Mm-hmm. But the decision of this, like going with particular app store, Google Play or the operating system itself, on what factors does it depend? Is it a money related issue or is it market related issue?
I think it depends on the customer. The customers I know have to do both because they have they want to address the whole market. So
right.
They go with both platforms, Android and iOS.
iOS. And do you see any trends, like which is more prevalent, which is not?
In the beginning it was iOS because Switzerland was an iPhone market. Now
right.
The Android phones with cheap phones
right.
I think catch up. I think at the moment it's 50-50, I'm not sure. Even
mm-hmm.
or maybe Android, I think we're still an iPhone country.
Right, great. So the development teams in your company, it's especially mobile development companies teams, how they look like? So which roles you have, how big they are?
After our reorganization, we have teams that are specialist teams.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't answer the question honestly because I'm not far away from development at the moment.
Okay. It's not just about development. I'm asking in general. Like, so do you have testers? Do you have developers? Do you have project managers? Designers?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, we have everything.
Okay.
We have also people working with electro engineers. We have mechanical people.
Okay.
We're building also products like ATMs. The espresso Milchschäumer
mm-hmm.
is something we built for Nespresso. So we have a lot of people from mechanical engineering
right.
to software engineering to business transformation to blockchain to whatever. So you
okay.
really will find someone if you need someone.
Okay.
The mobile people should be now in one team,
mm-hmm.
but I can't tell you how many people they are.
That's fine.
In the past, they were half in my team and half in another team,
mm-hmm.
and the other half was on Windows. But I have no idea now where they are and how many they are.
Do you outsource any work?
Outsource any?
Any work?
Any work? No. No, okay. We do it. Sometimes the customer has his own agency.
Mm-hmm.
Agency in kind of the GUI or the corporate design.
Mm-hmm.
This is something sometimes done externally because the customer chooses so, but we are able to do it ourselves. So we have our own visual designers and so on.
Okay, so you have designers and all those. Okay.
Yeah. But usually the client has his own people.
Mm-hmm. Right. So in which phases of the project are your customers involved?
In all. From the ideation, from the I don't know what my business is.
Mm-hmm.
It's also now I have a client that has no idea. He wants to change something. Has no idea where he wants to go.
Mm-hmm.
We have something end of life, and please can you just support the platform and just want to get rid of it because you want to do something new and just take the whole Wartung in English. To take the whole life cycle thing until this application dies, until we can bring the new one, just maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
So the maintenance of this dying application. We have everything.
Okay, great.
From giving birth to bury.
Right, great. Do you believe that if your client has some expertise with software development or mobile development, does it influence your work in a good or bad way?
We have both. We have clients that need us because they need more people, because they know with my three people I can do the whole work and it's a huge project.
Mm-hmm.
We have also clients that don't have internally software development silo or whatever.
Yeah.
We have both. I usually worked with clients that have people and just needed more people and people that needed people more skilled or people that are state of the art.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my background. I was never at a site where the customer has no IT self. So it was always a cool discussion because you can learn from both sides. They can learn from us and we can learn how companies work.
Right. So do you think it is useful, right?
It has a positive really impact. I think also from the client perspective it's useful because you should be, in my opinion, you should be always able to run the things yourself or to develop it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So you need people in your house, otherwise you have a dependency to external companies.
Mm-hmm.
I personally, if I would be the client, I wouldn't feel well to have everything outsourced.
Right.
But it's also my background, so maybe.
Correct.
It's like if you never eat Strauss, maybe you don't like it because you never did it. So
right.
I'm primed a little bit of working that way.
Do you have like legal experts in house?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what are their purposes usually? Regarding software development, I mean, are they about doing contracts, NDAs, and so on?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you can ask them for that. The last time we used it was for the data protection from the Europe.
GDPR, right?
GDPR, exactly.
But you do not have to outsource the legal work to any lawyer or any firm.
We outsource it sometimes. So.
Okay.
As I know, because I met one.
Okay.
Someone from a lawyer company that helped us in some issues. So,
Mm-hmm.
We don't do it. We're not a big company doing everything themselves. We have also, we need also experts.
Right.
When it goes to DPM.
So if we consider like from the ideation phase until the initial product release, if this, let's say this span is 100% in terms of time and cost.
Yeah.
What percentage of it roughly would you spend on requirements gathering activities? And do you find any challenges with that?
Yeah. The thing is, because I usually work in agile mode, you do the whole time. It's not something, say, I do now 1 year requirements gathering and then I do 3 years like I do it with RUP before. So I have first my inception phase and then I have my implementation phase and then requirements engineering is less than before.
Mm-hmm.
You always do it the whole time.
Right.
So find a percentage. It's difficult.
Right.
20%.
Right. I got the similar answers. 10 to 20%.
Yeah. I think at the beginning it's more, but mm-hmm. I think you don't have to stop because the world is still spinning.
Right.
If you stop doing it,
so I got also,
so you're never never at zero.
Right. I got some interesting answers here also. So they said it's very hard sometimes to really make a cut. So now we stop really gathering requirements or accepting more requirements or changes so that we can really focus on things. What is your experience?
I think focus is no problem because you never really never stop gathering.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, you should know when to go in depth and when to go in broad.
Mm-hmm.
So that the problem many companies have, they go in broad and then they go in deep with all requirements, and then you never finish. And then until you finish, the world has changed, and then you have to do something new. So I think that the trick is
to find the balance.
Find out what is important, the most important thing. I think prioritization. If you're good in prioritization, then it's no problem that it never ends, because it ends then when you have no value anymore.
In your opinion, then what works, going like broad or going deep?
I think you have to go broad in kind of way to see everything that's on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to find out which is the most important thing, which brings the most value out of it.
It means that at the ideation phase you go broad, and when you are doing sprints you go deep.
Yeah, but you can also find something new. So it's not finished after the ideation.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe during implementation you have a new cool idea.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have something completely new on the broad.
Mm-hmm.
Can bring something new on the table, and then it's a job of the portfolio people to look at it and say, okay, this idea is really cool, and I think it's worth to try something out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, for me, it's not this thing here I have now in my hand, I have to do it fully.
Mm-hmm.
I have always to slicing and slicing and slicing, and always say, this is the most important part of it, and
mm-hmm.
just make this. And then after I've seen it, maybe the next slice is also important, but sometimes the rest of it, it's
mm-hmm.
not so important as the next thing I have in my hand.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the whole agile movement, this idea is not really understood by many people, and that's why they think it's complicated.
Mm-hmm.
So I personally, if I talk to people about value, about value they get out, or value that they can deliver for someone,
mm-hmm.
it's really a prioritization thing.
Mm-hmm.
If you're able to prioritize and to know what you're doing,
mm-hmm.
then it's no problem that you have thousands of requirements that you have never invested. You know, oh, there is something on the table, but yeah,
right.
Maybe it comes, maybe not. It doesn't come. And then when it's time to look it closer,
mm-hmm.
then you look it closer.
Right. How many clients or stakeholders or their representatives usually participate in your elicitation activities? What is your experience? What works best? Having less people, having more people?
There are phases, so usually I work with 2-3 people together.
Mm-hmm.
Depends on which technique. So if I'm doing mock-ups or if I'm doing prototypes,
mm-hmm.
around 3-4 people. But then you have to run it a check with other people.
Mm-hmm.
So simultaneously it's around 3-4 people. But if you count everyone, it's around 15-20.
Okay. And do you communicate to all of them, or they are just representatives who are allowed to talk?
I would like to have people that uses the product. So I don't like to have bosses of people using the product.
Mm-hmm.
Or people who think they know what the other people want. That's also a huge problem, getting the real users, because they have a daily work
mm-hmm.
to do. And then to get them for a workshop, it's really hard and needs a lot of time to convince the customer that it's really, really important
mm-hmm.
that the boss or someone else has no idea what these people are doing.
Right.
They are knowledge worker. You don't know what they're doing. That's the idea of knowledge worker. The boss knows less.
Right. How does the communication with your clients look like? So is it digital? Is it face-to-face? Do you face any problems?
It's, in my opinion, also, what I do is really face-to-face in the same room.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, even if Skype would be cheaper, I think it's you need to touch things, especially
mm-hmm.
if you do prototypes with paper or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you have to touch it.
Right.
So in Switzerland it's closed. It's 1 hour, 1.5 hour one way. So
mm-hmm.
you can arrange it to see the people.
Right. And who is allowed to talk to your clients? So even developers can talk to your clients?
Yeah.
And do you think it is important?
I think it's very important, but also the idea is not that every developer chooses just a client and gives them a phone call.
Mm-hmm.
It should be concentrated, but of course you can ask first your product owner, your project leader, whatever you have first.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's necessary that the developer has the ability to call someone or to get a workshop with a real customer.
Right.
It should have a meaning.
Correct.
Not just because I can, I should call everyone every 10 minutes. But it's really important that they can do it.
Mm-hmm. Who is responsible for doing user or market research? Is it your responsibility or is it your client's responsibility?
In my project, it's the client's responsibility. If he forgets it, we have to tell him, don't forget, we have need some research. And then maybe he says, do it yourself or find someone.
Mm-hmm.
I personally think if you, as a client, don't know what you want to do, then you failed your job.
Right.
And of course, my job is to say, hey, remember, we need this, but don't force him that I have to do it. But ask him who wants to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it's cheaper to do it with an expert company than let developers do it.
Right. Are your app users globally distributed, or are they just within Europe?
In my case, in the beginning days, it was only Europe or even only Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
Now I have teams in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have teams outside of Europe or team members? No, at the moment not.
Okay.
No time zone issues. Right. Or no big time zone issues.
Now this may not be even relevant, but you might have even experience with that. So considering you have global usage across the world, how would you make assumptions about the users? I mean, I would imagine a Japanese user is different than Swiss user, right?
Of course, yeah, of course. That's even if you look Germany, Switzerland, they are really different.
Correct. So how do you make assumptions, or how does it work?
I think you need people that know the culture of the people using the software, the app, or whatever. So making assumptions your own, it's for me an anti-pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So you need someone who knows the people and who knows the culture.
Right.
Yeah. It's really important. And so making assumptions, you can try it. You can make assumption, but then you have to be really very agile and make a hypothesis, put it on the market, and look how the market reacts.
Mm-hmm.
But then if you did something really stupid, then you have a reputation problem.
Correct.
So I think it's good to have people local.
Mm-hmm. Do you collect non-functional requirements as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes copy-paste from sister projects.
Yeah, right.
Reuse it from other projects or from the same field, business field.
Yeah, same domain. Yeah,
same domain. Thank you. Yeah, from the same domain.
Could you name perhaps which are the most important ones for you, which you really look at performance or something like that for mobile apps?
Oh, for mobile apps.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's just availability of the service, of the data.
Is it like design, the performance, speed?
It's really the availability of the data. So if you have data on a server, that the data is available.
Mm-hmm.
Response time, of course.
Yeah.
Of UI elements and also of interactions with the web.
Right. So UX, essentially.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Hmm?
Most is UX, yeah.
And do you get any inputs from your customers regarding that?
Sorry?
Do you get any inputs from your customers, or is it you who decide because you have more knowledge about it?
It's we who decide. It's we who decide. We also have metrics on the apps. You know which areas clicked how often. If people do miss clicks, you get a lot of data out
right.
Of the apps.
Do you get also some hints from analytics, app analytics?
Yeah.
Do you use that, like Google Analytics or any service?
In one of my current projects, they wrote something themselves. I don't know if they used an app of an API of Google, but they know a lot of what is clicked. Is something misclicked? Did they try to click on a label and thought it's a button?
Mm-hmm.
But I can't tell you which technology it is.
Sure. Could you quickly tell me like which are the most important techniques you use for gathering requirements?
Yeah. For me, it's the prototype.
Mm-hmm.
Making prototypes, making scenarios, making use cases.
Mm-hmm.
Then I personally like a contextual inquiry.
Mm-hmm.
I would also think it's important to some creativity techniques.
Mm-hmm.
Just to get to the delighters. Because otherwise you don't have delighters if you only ask people. And so sometimes to get crazy ideas, not only brainstorming, but 635 mm-hmm. is a technique I like to do. The 6-8-head thinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Could you tell me a bit more about the prototyping experience, how you do it? Is it costly? Is it easy? Is it useful?
Yeah, I do it lo-fi, so I really use paper and pencil.
Okay.
Because if you go to the customer and you just go with a sheet of papers, and or if you ask to come to your office,
mm-hmm.
then you have a table full of papers with pens, then the people have no problem just to take the pen and write something in it.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, from one company, they decided a completely new UI thing,
mm-hmm.
UI component that never existed.
Right.
Because they did it on paper and thought this could be a cool idea. When we had that, and then we designed exactly that component
mm-hmm.
that yourself never came to the idea that such a component could be needed sometimes. Mm-hmm. It only happened to me once that a really young customer just put the paper aside and opened the laptop and started PowerPoint and started drawing PowerPoint.
Uh-huh.
It happened to me one time in my life. All the other times when they see a table full of paper and pens and you start explaining on the paper, to start drawing and writing on the paper.
Right. So it's more or less throwaway prototypes, right?
Yeah, it's a low fidelity, sorry,
mm-hmm.
Pencil and paper prototypes. But it's also my style, how I work, because I think I have no problem to throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
Because I need around 2 hours to design something on paper.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I talk to a customer and he or she thinks it's completely stupid what I'm doing, I can just throw it away. It was 2 hours, it was nothing.
Right.
But when I do a high-tech HTML5 prototype and I need it 1 week,
mm-hmm.
and then someone tells me, oh, gosh, it's really... Then I start to arguing why it's a good idea. Because 1 week of work, I don't want to say, okay, now I worked a week for nothing. I worked 2 hours for nothing, happens.
Right. What are your impressions about minimum viable products? Do you build them?
Yeah. The big problem is not everyone understands what MVP really is.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like and I live the idea of MVP.
Mm-hmm.
I even have things out that are not MVP, not yet MVP.
Mm-hmm.
So mostly in Switzerland, I think when people talk about MVP, it's release one with a lot of thing in it, and the MVP is much, much, much earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And in my case, I like to have alpha releases that really doesn't fulfill the MVP. But it's just a first step. You can try with some pilot users something out that even maybe a part of it is still not finished.
I'll ask you like this.
Yeah.
So does the success of MVP depend on where you're trying to release it? Are you releasing it for all the customers or just for beta users?
No, it can also be as beta users. For me, the MVP could also be beta users or mm-hmm. just friendly users or already customers of my or opponent or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't mean that everyone has to use it. The MVP for me could be earlier.
Right. And how are the reactions from customers? Because I've heard that usually what happens is customers really start believing that this is the end product and they are not happy with it.
Of course, yeah. Then, yeah. That's why I think the MVP should not be with all the people.
Right.
If you go with the early adopters,
mm-hmm.
they have early adopters have a special way of looking on products.
Mm-hmm.
They also are forgiving if something goes wrong.
Right.
The late majority, they will hang you for and write critics about it.
Right.
And the early adopters are thankful for it, that they are part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they are happy that they find errors and can tell you what could be better.
Mm-hmm.
So you really need the people on the MVP that... I think the MVP is your first customer segment. You have to... With the MVP, you go to your early adapters.
Mm-hmm.
And this is your first customer segment. And then when you go to the next segment,
mm-hmm.
you have to change your strategy.
Right.
But then you have your already your MVP. then you have to invest that on stability or non-function requirements, and then maybe you can go with a second alpha, MVP, whatever, to your early adopters and try something out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not a fan of trying everything out with every customer, because if you go to my mother,
mm-hmm.
they will hate you because she wants the thing working.
Right.
She doesn't want that your TV now does strange things, and because she just want to put it on and it works.
Correct. Can you tell me, can you name a few tools which you use within your company regarding requirements gathering, engineering, management, traceability, even for development purposes or project management, etc., communication?
Oh, now you will hear the answer that I don't like, if you like it. our customers have tools like doors, you name it.
So you have huge array of tools, right?
The customers usually have, me personally, I like to work with paper.
Mm-hmm.
With really also low fidelity there, with a gyro board or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, if you then need like traceability or something, regular things, usually the customer has already his own tool.
Mm-hmm.
And then we use his tool.
Okay.
So we use the customer tools.
Right, okay. Do you also collect privacy and security requirements actively?
Now you have to help me. What are privacy requirements for you?
Data privacy requirements, essentially. So do your customers give you input, or they have some demands that, okay, or security-related things, like how the app should be secure and what are the implications, complications?
Okay, yeah, of course, if you are a consultant, you always have sometimes the internal security guys,
mm-hmm.
you have internal audits, you get an input from there. From
mm-hmm.
the end customers, I never heard about such of requirements.
I got the same answer from many people, that customers usually do not have enough.
No, from the users, no.
Correct.
Maybe if you do tests with the users, they say, so why a teller do I have to insert my phone number here?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make sense. I just want to order online a pizza, for instance.
Yeah,
so why do I need my phone number here? But these things you hear it only if you do usability tests.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, complaints in a forum.
Mm-hmm.
But why does this app gather not that much? Why do I need to allow the satellites and so on and so on?
Right.
But these comments you have in a forum, but not personal.
Yeah. So could you tell me, in your opinion, what are the major differences between an app development and general software development? Do you see any differences? I can also give you some hints afterwards, but let's first hear from you.
Yeah. I think the big difference is testing.
Testing? Yeah.
Because you really have to test it
mm-hmm.
on the real devices. And in software development, the real device is already the device you're programming on. So,
mm-hmm.
And in mobile development, you have this gap. You simulate it on your laptop
mm-hmm.
or on your PC, and you test it on your PC and on simulation, but still then you have mobile phones and maybe, especially in the Android department,
mm-hmm.
That behave differently.
Right.
And then you really have to test it on the real devices. And
mm-hmm.
that's, I think, if you do a test first or agile, you really need a person who's doing only testing, an
mm-hmm.
agile tester.
Correct.
Which, when you do it normal software development, it's just a skill set that everyone has with him or with her, and then it's okay. And in mobile, I think you need an extra person just doing the testing.
Right.
And even if you do yourself automated and so on, you still need someone.
Hmm. Can you think of anything else? How about prototyping? So you use, let's say, just pen and paper, but the people who really do prototyping are very sophisticated. And I heard that they have to do it multiple times for different devices and for multiple platforms.
Yeah.
So it is much extensive, intensive. Like prototyping itself is intensive for mobile development.
Yeah, but no. I think if you make a mobile app, then you should also do a paper prototyping on that platform. And if you have two platforms,
mm-hmm.
Then it looks different. It's okay for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't have me as a person. I don't have an iPhone and an Android,
mm-hmm.
so I have no idea what the iPhone is doing.
Mm-hmm.
maybe I have a colleague that has an iPhone, and then I wonder why this application is different for him than for me.
Mm-hmm.
But usually it should be perfect for my needs. And Android sometimes works differently than the iPhone. So for me, it's completely okay to have two separate lines,
mm-hmm.
and the application has different features, even in Android and iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I can do something in Android, but I'm not able to do it in iPhone, and vice versa.
Okay.
Because of closed APIs, there are some APIs in an iPhone that are closed.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot use it as an app. In Android, you can use it. So okay. Why not give this advantage, this possibility to the user?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not allowed in iPhone, it would be not a really smart decision from the business people.
Right. Another difference what I've heard is so far is when you are developing web applications, especially, you have an ability to deploy changes as many times even in a day is possible.
Yeah.
But when it comes to mobile development, you are kind of limited by app stores because they have their own workflows, they have
yeah.
their own checks.
Yeah. Yeah.
So do you think it is kind of an issue, or let's say, is it different?
It's a huge difference. Mm-hmm. What I heard from iPhone, they also need time to check it.
Correct.
The applications on Android, they don't check it really, but in iPhone it's checked. So
mm-hmm.
You cannot be sure that when, for instance, you plan to make a huge market launch whenever.
Mm-hmm.
So you really have to take care that the dates are correct and to hope that this app in the iPhone store comes through on time.
Correct.
In Android, it's easier, but also you cannot bug fix fast. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it needs more time, essentially, and planning.
Yeah, it needs more time and planning. And if you want to do something, a huge market launch, like a big bomb,
mm-hmm.
then it needs really planning, and maybe also asking the people from iOS or whatever. I don't know if I have to pay it. I don't know it.
Correct.
Yeah, well, it's also really, really difficult. Yeah.
Do you think non-functional requirements, they play a different role in case of mobile apps than normal web applications or softwares?
I don't think so.
Don't think so? Okay.
I think it's different, but it's also the same. So you have your NFRs. Maybe they are not exactly the same, but they are as important as
I heard an interesting comment from one of the interviewees. He said, usually, if users are using web application, and if the app is kind of slow, they end up blaming the browser. But when it comes to mobile, they think it's the problem of the developer. Do you observe anything like that?
I don't know, to be honest. it's a speculation. So when I take from my experience, the cool mobile UIs that have the whole time the wheel, the loading wheel, then I blame the developer.
Mm-hmm.
Because I now see that there's a wheel there, and I know he's doing some stupid data collecting, and I don't blame the network.
Right.
It's not a possibility to blame the network and say, okay, why don't I have 4G? Then I say, okay, it's 4G, so maybe the application is not well written, so they can cache something, or they can make the loading different. But I think because I'm professional, so maybe I try to blame the developer anyway.
Yeah.
So I can't give you a good answer.
Yeah, good.
Or a qualified answer.
Mm-hmm. What do you think are the biggest challenges in collecting requirements for mobile apps? For example, the mobile app can be used in many situations, unpredictable yeah. situations and so on. So does it influence
uh-huh.
also...
Okay.
The way you collect requirements, or does it need much more thought than normal web application?
I think at the moment, no. In the beginning, I think it was more difficult because you forgot things.
Mm-hmm.
But when I remember right, the developers always came and said, okay, now maybe you don't have the network as you have it at home.
Mm-hmm.
So it was in the early days. For instance... Also doing responsive websites, the whole video and images in the beginning. So you
mm-hmm.
have to find techniques to do it differently because you don't want to download the whole video on a mobile phone or with the connections
mm-hmm.
you have and not for no flat rate. I think, no, it's not more difficult. I think the people know that there are differences and they care themselves. So they know what they have to
look for. But you learn this through experience, right, over the years?
In its experience, yeah. So if you start now
mm-hmm.
your own company, no idea about mobile, and just came out from the server world,
right.
then you will have your big wonder.
Correct.
Your big aha moment. So I think you need experience, With so we already have experience. That's why it's easier to do a web or a native or a Windows application, because mm-hmm. we have the experience from years. And now if you have 5-6 years experience in mobile, I don't think it's a big difference.
Mm-hmm. I think you also mentioned like not having real access to the end users is also kind of difficult for mobile apps especially.
Yeah, but you have the same problem also for not mobile apps. So if you go for the mass market, mm-hmm. You have the same problem. So right. It's not a question of if it's mobile or not mobile. It's a question: is this for the mass market, or is it for the market just the employees of a customer?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think this is a different question. This is a question, not a mobile, not a mobile.
Right. Any decisions which you make during your elicitation process, or do they depend on external factors such as different versions of operating systems, or external libraries and their versions, and so on?
They influence it, of course. Mm-hmm. So sometimes you have to use some libraries, sometimes you have to use some tools. It depends, yeah.
Correct. Do you consider any troubles that might be faced by special users, such as old people or blind people?
Yeah. So for instance, we had once a project. It was a second one, cannot explain it. Yeah, sometimes you have products, even if you do product development, mm-hmm. that older people uses.
Mm-hmm.
So there are tactical differences. They cannot work with small buttons. They don't see very well.
Mm-hmm.
They don't hit the target if they have to hit the button or whatever. So, yeah, you have to care for it if you have people using that
mm-hmm.
kind of device, application, whatever.
So you make conscious decisions regarding that.
Yeah, of course.
Great. So some years ago, even app stores used to have strange constraints, such as for Android, you had maximum number of methods which you can have, or the size of the application. Did you meet ever such constraints?
I don't remember anymore, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'll ask you now a few questions. I mean, this is like a rapid fire, so I'll give you a few keywords, and you just tell me if these things are crucial for app.
Okay.
Yeah, app development or success of the app. Power consumption.
Yeah.
Yes. Different mobile devices.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Third-party libraries and their versions. I think you already said yes to this.
Yeah.
Mobile advertisements and revenue generation through it.
Not my market.
Okay, so you don't see that customers are really wanting to put ads on the apps to get money?
It's because it's not my environment at the moment. It's at the moment I have clients making apps for their own employees.
Mm-hmm. Enterprise. Yeah, okay, employees. Correct.
And exactly. And then it's not a question.
It's not a question. Correct. Or user feedback on app stores or social media platforms.
You should work with it, yeah, and give answers, and you have someone trained that has the skills to answer correctly.
Do you do that?
Yeah.
Okay.
You have either people that are specialists on it or some skilled people in the team.
Do you do it manually, or do you have any automated tools for that?
Manually.
Mm-hmm. Data privacy? I think it is a concern nowadays.
Yeah.
Any legal constraints?
Yeah, of course.
Great. So now we have just two questions, and I just want to reflect. I want you to reflect on it. So, what are your impressions about hybrid applications?
About hybrid applications, they are necessary.
They're good, they're bad, or what are the pros, what are the cons?
If they are only hybrid, then it's a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think my personal opinion is that the main use case should be native.
Mm-hmm.
And the other use case could be hybrids or could be web or whatever. But the main use case should be native. It's a completely different feeling. It's not only look and feeling. It's a different feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do hybrid apps, it doesn't look like an Android app or like an iPhone app. It looks different.
Mm-hmm.
It feels different. And the way you navigate is different.
It does not mean necessarily worse. It is just different, right? Okay, and do you also observe that, if the app uses more native features, then hybrid is not a good choice?
Yeah.
Or anything like that? Yeah?
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
Is it more cheaper to build hybrid apps?
I think that's the reason why they're doing it. You can make it hybrid and have it for all platforms, or mostly all.
Right. What are your impressions about progressive web apps? Are they promising? Are they like mature enough or not mature enough? Will they occupy some space in mobile industry?
Difficult to say.
So, for example, I got a couple of answers here which are interesting. So, I could not think about them. So, one of the guys, he said they are actually cool in the sense you can bypass the app stores and still give the mobile experience to your users.
Exactly. But there's the same problem with hybrid apps. It looks the same for every phone. But it doesn't look like native. It doesn't feel like native.
So you mean if you really want to make it platform specific, then you have to do many platform specific things.
Exactly. Then you have to do it three times, yeah.
Okay.
So in the case of bypass, the App Store could be a good idea, but mm-hmm. I'm not sure if the feeling is still the same. So, for instance, in the early days of JavaScript, having a tree opening,
mm-hmm.
like in your Eclipse environment. So imagine you open your packages. This feeling, it looked the same,
mm-hmm.
but it was slower, but not as slow that you complain, but slow enough that you say, each time. Mm-hmm. And I think, I know,
I also got a really interesting
before, but I think it's a tick too slow.
Mm-hmm.
Not that one that you complain, but you feel it that it's not the same.
So I got a very interesting comment about this. So the company I interviewed, they are doing exclusively hybrid applications.
Yeah.
And he said this discussion essentially about the performance and being different experience, it is made usually by tech guys and not by end users. So end users are not so sophisticated.
Could be. Yeah. Could be. Could be. I'm open to it. Could be. Maybe from my own craftsmanship ethos.
Correct.
I know I can do it better. Because maybe I think why shouldn't do it better? But yeah, could be also economic decision to say, okay, if the end user don't feel the difference,
correct,
then I can make it cheaper. Yeah, of course.
Great.
But then the next question is, are they able to navigate to the application? Because mm-hmm. they learn that from all the people. Or mm-hmm. people not skilled, not IT native people.
Mm-hmm.
They use their mobile because they are used to it.
Right.
When you go then to an application on the web and have a different kind of way working with it, maybe the back button, not the back button, the buttons doesn't work as they should, or some hard buttons don't work.
Right.
They will start not to understand the application.
Great. So I think we are almost done. I mean, we are done, essentially, and in time. First of all, thank you very much for the time.
You're welcome.
I think I'll stay in contact somehow because I think there will be a lot to hear from you otherwise, apart from this project also.
Cool.
Maybe I'll plan a visit in some time.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Good. You're welcome. You're welcome.
And
have a good work with your case.
Thank you. Thank you. Hear from you.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.